following is a presentation of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Are you tired of hearing opinions from experts and people who do it for a living?
Shut up and get to the point!
It's the OHL Fanboys Podcast. Weekly recaps, trade rumors, jersey talk, and some special guests. All things you can probably do without.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Too bad it's a podcast. Welcome to the 21st century, and welcome to another episode of OHL Fanboys with Steve McLean and Brian Thompson.
Welcome to the OHL Fanboys Podcast, Season 5, Episode 18. I am Steve McLean. With me is Brian Thompson, a man who is $60 richer this week, thanks to one Seth Rollins.
God bless me, Seth Rollins. I haven't won that Rumble tournament in 12 years. Oh, heaven on earth.
What number was it that, what was the magic number for Seth Rollins?
10.
10, nice. Very good. It was a decent Rumble, I thought. Nothing too crazy, but, you know. I guess
it was all right.
Too long, though. You know, I think we made this
complaint
about WrestleMania a couple years ago when I was at your place, and it was like 7 hours long. It's like the Royal Rumble.
7 hours is too much for anything. Yeah. I don't want to have sex for 7 hours. I don't want to watch junior hockey for 7 hours. Nothing. There's nothing that is 7 hours long that's enjoyable.
And the Royal Rumble doesn't need to be five.
No.
Plus another, two for the pre-show, so yeah, 7 hours.
Like, and I just watched TakeOver like 2.5 hours the night before.
Which,
and I wonder why no one watches Raw. Hey, what podcast is this?
Oh, yeah, hockey. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, fuck. Sure, fine.
Oh, but there is some things to talk about this week, sir. First of all, right off the bat, I think the biggest news off of this week is the fact that we had a coaching firing and coaching change from the Owen Sound Attack. The Owen Sound Attack have fired head coach Todd Gill and replaced him on an interim basis with assistant Alan Letang, a former OHL player himself. Pretty odd timing for this. I mean,
they just won.
They had just ended a long losing streak in their most recent game. So they had lost, I think, about five in a row, something like that, maybe six. And but it's odd timing because people are like, wait a minute, you trade away all your best players and then you naturally start losing games and you're going to fire your coach. That's what it looks like on the surface. From people I've talked to, it sounds like this is a decision that had been kind of in the talks for a while. People are thinking, you know, maybe Todd Gill wasn't the guy to get things done there. Some people saying, you know, hadn't been developing younger players properly. Some people suggested that the writing was on the wall after they had a really good team last year but couldn't get past the second round. But so if this is all the, oh, we've had this idea of getting rid of him for a while, I don't know why they would suddenly just decide at the end of January to do it, and not maybe just wait till the end of the season. Unless this is a deal where it's like, let's get someone else in now, and just, you know, the season's a write-off. Let's just, you know, try and build towards something next year.
But they're in fifth.
Yeah, actually, they are.
Like, Saginaw fired their coach. They were in third. Owen Sound's in fifth. Like, what? As a Spitz fan sitting teetering on eighth, it's like, should we have fired everyone? Guelph, you're right in between Saginaw on that. Should you fire Burnett? Like, I,
you know what? Believe me, people have suggested that this year.
Oh, but it's like, holy shit. Like, I can totally see teams out of the playoffs, like, getting pissy and they're like, okay, done. But I don't get this one bit.
Yeah, it's an odd choice. Like I said, it's one of those, I just don't understand the timing of it. Like, why do it now? I know with NHL teams it's a bit more at stake, but in the OHL usually don't see this until the off season, right? Like, how many summers in a row now?
Early in the season.
Yeah, how many summers in a row have we seen, like, you know, everyone play a game of musical chairs, right?
It's basically February.
This is our last episode of January, so. Which, holy crap, it's already February. Felt like Christmas was yesterday, but. It seems like such an odd move to me, but it's one of those. I'm guessing they're trying to just get someone in place, even though Alan Letang is named as an interim head coach. I don't think that's, from what I've heard, that's not their long-term solution. I think they're after somebody else. So I don't know if that's the case. I don't know why you would just can kill Gill now and not just leave him on to the end of the season. Cause you know, unless it was a deal where the players were not fans of him, I don't see how this helps your team now. But
I want everyone right now. I'd like to give Steve some rare praise because a coach named Gill got fired from his job and Steve did not make the obvious Simpsons reference. So. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. Well, you kind of didn't give me the chance yet. I wasn't done talking about him.
Nope. Too bad.
But just for you, I won't do it.
Ah, jeez.
Can you give me some wins? Tell me it's a lot. I need a lot. I need this. interesting news out of Owen Sound on that regard. I would say the next biggest news in junior hockey this week, and okay, it's not OHL, but I think it's even on an OHL podcast, it's worth talking about. We're going to have a franchise movement in the WHL this summer. The Kootenai Ice are going to be no more. The 2002 Memorial Cup champions are moving to Winnipeg, and Winnipeg's getting the WHL for the first time since 1984.
They're not even close to each other.
No, they are not. Same ownership, apparently. Kootenai is last in attendance in the WHL. In the press release that the WHL had, well, they had a press conference, I should say, but the WHL themselves had said, basically, from what we've seen, this franchise is not going to be viable going forward in Kootenai. But we thank the fans there anyway. And they're excited to get going in Winnipeg, all that, you know, talk and jargon. Here's the crazy thing. So apparently, and actually I think I said same owners. I think they might have new owners. I can't find the article right now. Regardless, so the plan for this, I don't know if they're still going to be called the Ice or not, but the plan for them in Winnipeg is, see, here's the thing too. There's a couple, you know, NHL cities in the WHL that successfully have junior teams, right? The Oil Kings and the Hitmen, they do well for themselves. But the deal with those teams is that they're owned by the NHL team. They play out of the NHL arena. You know, all the season ticket holders of the Oilers and the Flames get, you know, season tickets essentially for the junior teams. They're well supported. This is a deal totally separate from the Jets. The Kootenai Ice, Winnipeg Ice, whatever you want to call them, they're going to be a totally separated from the Jets. They're not playing at the arena downtown where the Jets and the AHL Moose play, and that's another thing.
Shocker.
Well,
they're going to play Mondays at 11 a.m. if they were going to have any ice time.
Yeah, that's true. But here's the thing. Those other two NHL cities that support a WHL team, they don't have AHL teams. So this WHL team is going to have to play essentially like third fiddle in Winnipeg, but apparently the idea is for at least the first two seasons, they're going to be playing at the University of Manitoba.
So they're the fourth fiddle.
Seating capacity of about 2,000. And then the idea is while they're playing there, a new rink is going to be built somewhere. It's apparently the southwestern end of town where they plan on building, you know, like a WHL site, like 5,000-6,000 seat building, and surround it with a bunch of entertainment options and basically try and make this new district, I guess, and surround it by this arena and team. And they said it's going to be at least two seasons, because obviously those don't go up right away. So I don't know. Thoughts, sir?
Like, what are they expecting? with that many hockey teams. I unless this is a tax fraud thing that I'm just not understanding. They fought so long and hard to get the Jets back, and I get you can support more than one team. But the Dub is an expensive travel league, for one. And for two, if you're playing at a university rink, you're basically throwing away 2 years of revenue. Like, this is St. Mike Major's territory here.
Yeah.
Which, you know, cool, but what the fuck? It's not financially viable in Kootenay. We're off to the University of Manitoba.
It's
okay.
Like they've actually made their travel way harder. They were the most western of the Eastern Conference teams, so now they're just the most eastern team in the league, period. They've got Brandon a couple hours away, but other than that, man, like their travel has gotten a lot harder for them. Because after Brandon a couple hours west of them, the next closest team, I believe, is Regina. And that's got to be at least a 6-hour drive, I believe. And then it just gets worse from there. So, on top of this, so division, there is a couple division flops here, switch ups. No conference changes, but Kootenay was in the Central Division with all the Alberta teams. So now they obviously move to the East Division with Brandon and most of the Saskatchewan teams. All the Saskatchewan teams were in a division with Brandon, but now someone's got to move to the division with the Alberta teams, so that falls on the most western Saskatchewan team. So, hey, Swift Current, you know how you got, you know, Moose Jaw an hour away? Well, guess what? You're in a division with Lethbridge and Calgary and Edmonton now.
I don't have anything to add because it just makes no sense to me. It couldn't have been that bad in Kootenay to basically play for free for 2 years.
Yeah, it just seems...
I want to see what the season ticket price points are to play at a freaking CIS rink.
Ooh, yeah.
Because most of those CIS rinks are basically Parks and Rec rinks.
The Kootenay Ice, by the way, have last year they were last in the league. They averaged they had a big jump at one point. So right now this is averaging 2,200 fans. A couple years ago, they hit their low in 16-17. They averaged only 1,754, but they jumped in one season back up to 2,400. So they had a spike, but I don't know, but this was a team at one point that, you know, back in the early 2000s during their Memorial Cup days, they averaged 3,600 at one point. So obviously it's gone way down steadily over the years. They're kind of in that Brampton, Mississauga territory. So maybe it needed to come. I'm not sure, but regardless.
Fuck the Dub. What else is
there? That was the thoughts on that one anyway. One more thing about the Dub. I'm sorry, but remember how a couple weeks ago we were talking about those teams in the Dub that have the Don Cherry jerseys, and we're like, why are so many teams in the Dub doing this? Apparently, every Canadian WHL team in the WHL, as I just said, I'm tired, folks, I'm sorry. Every Canadian WHL team has this Don Cherry jersey night. Apparently, it's all to like raise money for organ donation charities, so that's the deal there. So, I mean, again, you can bitch about, oh, it's dumb, they're all wearing Don Cherry jerseys, but it's for a good cause, so there you go.
No one was bitching.
I didn't say you were.
Who was bitching?
Probably me. I thought, I...
There are no bad jerseys if they're for charity.
No, and that's what I'm coming down to, that's what I'm saying. I didn't know what it was for.
If it's just to like boost on Cherry's ego, then.
But see, that's the thing. I would have thought that was legit if you had said that. But anyway, moving on to more OHL centric topics, since this is an OHL podcast. There was something that happened in the Ottawa Saginaw game on Sunday that was kind of interesting. One of those you don't see that often. You know, every time you see a diving penalty, is it usually not accompanied with a tripping call or a hooking call as well?
Yeah, just because, you know, both teams play hard. Keep it fair. Everyone wins.
Well, I guess on Sunday in Ottawa, Saginaw's there. Brady Gilmore had a breakaway for Saginaw. He is tripped. He falls. He was called for diving, but the Ottawa player was not called for hooking or tripping or whatever. Ottawa scores on said power play and kind of powers their way to a win on that. I know some people on the Saginaw side were pretty upset about that one.
Why? That's how it's supposed to be. We're just used to it being stupid.
That was the thing. Like, I've gotten used to it being like that, but part of me used to always go, wait, if it's a dive, then how is it a trip?
Right.
But
that was the stupid part.
Yeah.
But we just got used to the stupid. Now that it's not stupid, people complain. No. Shut up, Sag, you know?
So that happened. We have our first 50-goal scorer in the league this year. Ty Fellhaber from the Ottawa 67s scores 50 goals in, I believe it was his 47th game, and now he has 51 goals in 48 games. That kid has been on fire all season long. I believe he's on pace to hit near 70 goals this year, which apparently the league has not had a 70-goal scorer since John Tavares in, I believe it was 06-07 when he had 72. And the last one before that was Eric Lindros. So we'll see if Fellhaber can get there. I know you don't have many Ottawa 67s opinions beyond Michael DiPietro, but I figured that was worth mentioning on the show this week.
I like their jerseys.
That's about as far as it goes.
I've had no time, man. I'm doing home renovation. I actually went to a game Sunday, but, you know, whoop-de-doo.
Well, you went to the Ice Dogs Spits on Sunday, and Ice Dogs are obviously one of those top teams in the league, but you were telling me the other day that you actually were, it's like, hey, wasn't a bad game for the Spits.
No, I played half decently. Niagara didn't play that great, but I'm guessing that was the tail end of a road swing for them, so I don't know. It was an afternoon. It was funny because they're billing this as Bomber's birthday.
Oh yeah, I saw
I'm
that.
I'm like, oh, that's cool. So usually when there's like a mascot's birthday, all the other mascots show up, and there was like no other mascots.
I saw
there's cupcakes somewhere. I didn't get any, but there's cupcakes.
I remember going to an Ice Dogs game at the Jack years ago, and it was Bones' birthday, and like the only other OHL mascot there was Sarge, and then they just had like it was a bunch of like these corporate mascots, like the Booster Juice thing, and I think the mascot for like the Junior B team and stuff, like a lot of local and corporate crap. It's not like they can ever get a deal where it's like, hey, here are all the team mascots, right? Unless they
no, have... and that's understandable too. It's just kind of a weird promotion, you know, and especially, you know. What the fuck made that Bomber's birthday? I remember when Bomber started. That was a summertime thing. His birthday's in the summer. What are we doing? Or is this kind of like if your birthday's on Christmas, you celebrate June 25th?
Yeah, that seems a little odd. It'd be one thing if it was like that. Yeah, it was actually in February of what, or January of whatever year that we created Bomber. But did you get any like residuals from it since you're a former Bomber yourself?
I have the original jersey, but other than that, no.
Ah. Well, I guess that's, hey, for you, that's good enough, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to find my dad's post on HF boards.
Yeah, you did mention that you wanted to talk about.
So I'm going to paraphrase. This is not going to be totally exact, but the guy who sits behind me at the Spitz game, you know how they have those things, oh, renew your season tickets, you can win a bunch of prizes and crap. Yeah, he won what was called Chalk Talk. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Oh, after a Spitz game, talk with the Spitz coaches. And you get to ask them questions. And I'm thinking, you know, I get certain things, like win a actual physical prize or a gift card or something. What good would it be to talk to a coach? And I get we've interviewed coaches on here, but I mean, as a fan, what the hell am I going to ask him that doesn't have him side-eye me? All you can really do is, like, second-guess him, right?
Yeah, piss him off. Because you know all these people, and like you always say, especially in Windsor, people who are just thinking, I know better. Why has he got this guy matched up with that guy, et cetera, et cetera? It's just like, dude, you're not a coach.
So he invited my dad to join him, and he basically asked something to the point of, like, why is Boca on the power play and stuff like that, because he's like mainly a checking guy. And the coaches, I guess, couldn't have been ruder and said basically, oh, well, we set our power play lines and that's that. I'm thinking, is that the dumbest fucking thing you ever heard of in your entire life?
Yeah, that's a pretty lazy.
We don't make adjustments during the game if things aren't going our way.
Yeah, that's
why coach.
that seems a bit either
you're basically Coach McKay now, just yell line change.
Change it up. Cool.
Yeah. You useless asswad.
Yeah, that seems you're the one talking about coaching changes earlier. That sounds like one coming, but
no, not this one. That one's nepotism. There's nothing you can do about that.
No, yeah, that's a one or two things. Either yeah,
it's a stupid promotion. It's a stupid fucking answer to a stupid, well, not a stupid question, but it's like, what smart question can you ask someone who's employed in that specific field? And that's like me asking a neurologist something.
Yeah. Why don't you guys, like, research this?
Yeah. Shut up.
That could easily just be the coaches going, I don't want to be here. I'm just going to give the laziest answer possible.
Then why have the promotion?
Exactly.
I sympathize immensely with the coaches not wanting to talk to fans. I wouldn't want to either. This isn't some public outreach thing. This is appease your fucking season ticket holders thing. But you're just setting yourself up for failure. Terrible ass promotion. We need the Ottawa people to run all the league's promotions now. Kitchener's got to do all the celebration jerseys, and Ottawa's got to run all the promotions.
They get just like...
And Sarnia can fold.
Aw, poor Emma.
Nah, I'm just kidding.
Nah.
They can move back to Newmarket.
Cornwall. There, everyone's
Which
happy.
Which one was Newmarket?
Sorry?
I thought they were Newmarket.
They were Newmarket and Cornwall.
Which one was more recent?
Newmarket.
Well, then shut up.
they like won Memorial Cups and had a history in Cornwall, then moved to Newmarket for two seasons and then to Sarnia. So.
Two glorious seasons, sir. Go Royals.
I wouldn't say that, but okay. Hey, you know what? Flint's not doing half bad anymore. They got 4 wins in their last 10 games. They killed
Eric fucking Wellwood, that's why.
They killed Kitchener Friday night in Kitchener. They put up 5 goals in the first period, 5-0 lead on the Rangers, ended up winning the game 7-2. Like, this is, like, again, Flint's not a good team. I'm not trying to say that they are. But this is kind
of making the most of what they got.
Yeah, and this is kind of more the team they are, right? Like they're winning on a semi-regular basis now, right? Like, they're not. You take a look at their record in their last 10 games, 4-5-1. It's like that's not bad. There are teams farther ahead of them in the standings that are doing having way worse stretches than that right now. And I don't even know if Flint can sustain that the rest of the season for the final 20 games, but it's just like, hey, you know what? They're not as bad as everyone thought they were.
No, that was a case where the coaching change really worked.
Well, definitely. And
I don't think there's a shitload of junior able coaches that are just waiting, though, you know?
No, it all depends. It's yeah, almost like you got to wait for those guys who are in the NHL or AHL who can't find work there, so then they get hired here. Unless you find that next new young coach, like an Eric Wellwood. So, on contrast to that, so Flint, you know, rolls in there and kicks Kitchener's ass on Friday night. Now, that's a good win if you're Flint. Now, if you're the Kitchener Rangers, though, regardless of how good Flint actually is or not, you lose. You're down 5-0 to Flint on home ice in the first period. That is not a good night with the team that, you know, Flint has been this year, and you end up losing 7-2. You know, can't be a lot of good feelings after that game if you're a Rangers fan. You know, go for, you know, the selling season or not. But you know what? They turned that into getting your ass kicked by Flint at home on a Friday night into winning on the road in the Sioux Sunday afternoon. Like, it's just, it's a perfect example of how unpredictable junior hockey can be. Maybe it's predictable come playoff time, but in the regular season, man, it's like...
Anyone can beat anyone on a given night. Yeah. They just can't do it 4-7.
No, exactly. But it's just, it's really interesting how it just, it's a very good microcosm of how it works, really. At least in my opinion. Because Sioux has been one of the hottest teams in the OHL. They went into that game against Kitchener with a 7-game winning streak. And Kitchener won in overtime, so Sioux kind of keeps a quote-unquote streak going. And they are still kind of one of the hottest teams in the league at 8-1-1, as are the Niagara Ice Dogs, actually, who've won 6 in a row, and that's the current longest winning streak that there is. But, you know, the top teams are kind of rising to the top. They're all on long winning streaks right now, well, except for Guelph and Saginaw. Saginaw had actually just lost after winning a whole bunch in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10, so... It's just going to be one of those, you know, we're into that dog day of the season now, right? Like, the trade deadline is over, the talk of all that is gone, but it's still a bit too early to talk playoffs. You know who the contenders are, and it's just a matter of, you know, you got 20 games left, and it's like, let's just get there without getting hurt, right?
No, because a lot of teams are jockeying for position still. There's a lot to fight. There's actual, you know, playoff races to get in. Erie's fighting to get in, which, please do, Erie. Please. Please catch us.
I think that's...
Barrie's fighting Peterborough in North Bay.
Yeah, I think the Western... If we're going to get the elusive tiebreaker game, I think the Western Conference is our best shot this year. Barrie has been steadily losing games more and more, and they've been falling farther and farther behind in ninth place. Now, mind you, there's still only 6 points back of Peterborough, so it's... It's not like they're out of it entirely. They can still turn this around, but it's just, it seems like Barrie has been losing a lot more these days, and, you know, it's not something that I'm not used to. Barrie always seems to be one of those really good teams year after year, so to see them having a bad year like this is a bit
awesome.
I'm not saying awesome, it's just different. As my old Battalion fan self would say, it's awesome, but it's not like the Battalion are doing a whole lot better than Barrie anyway. They're only 7 points ahead, but there definitely is that gap now in the Eastern Conference between like the top 4 and the rest. You know, Oshawa and Mississauga have got an 8-point gap in between them, and you know, there's definitely a level, you know, there between those two teams. Like, it's, you know, 8 points doesn't sound insurmountable at this time of year, but I'm sorry, but you know, no one. They're not making that up, you know what I mean?
No, totally.
So, you got that in the East, and you're starting to get that in the West a little bit as well. 9-point separation between Guelph in 4th and Owen Sound in 5th. So, those top 4 in each conference are starting to pull away from everybody else. Because for a long time this season, like, you had this deal where it was like from 2nd to 9th, it was like a 5-point gap, right? So now you're starting to see that separation. But, hey, like you said, at the bottom of the standings, you still got a lot of teams, you know, fighting with each other. I mean, from Mississauga in 5th to Peterborough in 8th out in the East, it's 2 points. And, you know, hey, would you rather play Sudbury or Oshawa in the first round or get Ottawa or Niagara? You know, it's like one win could swing that right now. And same goes in the Western Conference. I mean... You know, Windsor, hey, they're only a couple points behind Kitchener, a couple more points behind Sarnia. You get a few wins.
Catch us, Erie. Catch us.
You want the higher draft pick.
Catch us. No, I just want guilt-free not buying playoff tickets.
You just spent $1,500 on a floor.
Yeah. Are we done talking about the OHL?
We are. I was just about to wrap it up.
No, this is for you young kids out there who are thinking about... I'm full of Don Cherry here. But all you young kids who are thinking about getting a home and do shit properly. Okay? I had to pull a laminate floor out of a living room. You know what was under that laminate floor? Another fucking laminate floor. Who does that shit? Who does that shit? Do it right. Do it once. Do it properly. It's not fucking hard. Are you putting laminate down? Put some padding underneath of it. I had one padding in one bedroom, a different padding in another, and the whole rest had parchment paper like they were baking this fucking floor. And then I go in my basement, which has had gross-ass carpet forever, and I'm ripping just a little bit of that off to get my stairs, and what's under the damn carpet? Perfectly good laminate! Who the fuck is doing that? What the fuck, man? It's perfectly fine! Why would you want carpet, which is just full of dust and gross and cat poo and ugh! What is wrong with... So do it right! Get rid of carpet. Carpet's gross. Carpet sucks ass. Carpet is hard to maintain. And put your laminate in properly. And don't put shit over your laminate. If you're gonna, God forbid, get carpeting, take the laminate out first. Or fuck, just do it right.
Well, here's how you benefited from that. You didn't have to get more laminate flooring. You just had to rip
it. I know carpet. How I benefited. That's not the point. The point is for you young kids, do your fucking home renovations right so you don't make people like me fucking insane.
And on that note...
Fuck London. Get to our guest.
On that note, it's time to get to our guest. Hey, it's a London Knights reporter this week. When we come back on the OHL Fanboys podcast, it'll be Knights reporter Alain Cavillon.
Down by the Otters, and Erie breaks out with a freshman on in Sproul. Emmett Sproul, left side pass for Yetman. He scores! Dinner's going to be cold tonight. Chad Yetman with the overtime winner.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys podcast. Our guest this week is one of the many, many reporters for the London Knights. Hey, they're they're the most followed team on social media for a reason. Hey, it's Mr. Alain Cavillon. Alain, thank you so much for joining the show this week and talking some London Knights hockey with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So we were talking a little bit beforehand, and you were mentioning me, you know, you come from Timmins, Ontario, and of course, as many may have guessed from your name, a little bit of a French background there. But how does a French boy from Northern Ontario make his way down to London and start covering the Knights, and not just the Knights, but of course some play by play on the side with the London Nationals?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a lot of hard work and a lot of time put into the game, but I mean, in the end, it's all worth it. And so it actually started. I was doing as a kid, I was always into the older age groups, like the midget hockey and that kind of thing. And I always said, you know, I either want to wear that jersey one, like as a player, or I want to like end up doing something with like that team. And what happened was I ended up they're the Schumacher Cubs, they're a midget single A team, and I ended up doing a bit of volunteer work with them, like just some tournaments and that kind of thing. And you know, eventually I was like, it was a good time with them. And then you eventually want more. So then our AAA team, the Timmins Majors, they had somewhat of a good roster at the time. So I decided, you know, why not do something with them? And I'd go to the games and sometimes you'd fill up water bottles or just, you know, go get something for the managing staff, the little things. And then eventually we ended up getting a junior A team, the Timmins Rock. And they're from the Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League, and they've been, I think they've been there for like almost three or four years now. They relocated to Timmins, and then I started doing, you know, ticketing at the door with them, and I ended up being a goal judge at some point, and then I ended up doing online stats for them during the game. You know, just little things that just to get some experience under the belt. And then the cool thing is every team I've been with, I've made sure to always grab a hockey puck with their logo on it, to remember them and remember like the cool work I did. So I actually have a puck at home with the Timmins Rock logo on it, you know, to just show like, you know, the time I've spent with them. And now all of a sudden I came here to London to go to school, you know, broadcast journalism, this program I'm in. And I didn't think too much of it at first, but I just remember before coming here to London, I was just like, they have the London Knights here, like the OHL Live, like maybe I can do something with them. And eventually it was just talking to my program coordinator, Jim Van Horn, who does play color commentating for 980 CFPL. And, and I was like, hey, is there a way I can do something with them? And he's like, oh yeah, like you can definitely come check out a game and start covering it. And then eventually that led to doing statistics with Rogers TV for a bit last year. And then this year, my graduating year, it became a full-time gig and, you know, just working your way up the ranks. And now I get to, you know, talk to players after each game and, you know, write articles about them and keep track of it. And plus it's, you know, get to enjoy some high-end skill here in the Ontario Hockey League. So it's really, really cool how everything just kind of, you know, progressed as I got older. Like my first gig was like a hockey team. I think I was like maybe 9 years old. And then now I'm 19. So like in 10 years, I feel like I moved up fairly quickly, and I've been like really fortunate with the opportunities I've gotten. I've just made most of them. So really cool story there.
So growing up in Timmins, how known or how much followed is the OHL? Obviously, you know, being up there, there is no OHL team. I know every now and then on the online forums, people try and kick tires of who should get an expansion team, and there's always that one guy that says Timmins, and everyone's like, I don't know about that. But how growing up, how much did you hear about or follow at all of the OHL?
So growing up, like it's really. So Sudbury is 3 hours away from Timmins, and then you got North Bay, that's 4 hours away. So I've got family down in North Bay, and you know, the North Bay Battalion are down there. So naturally I kind of just got hooked on to the battalion a little bit, which is really weird nowadays, because when the battalion played the Knights not long ago, it was like, hey, someone asked me a question on Twitter, and they're like, hey, like since London's playing North Bay, you know, who are you cheering for? And I'm like, buddy, like you just broke my brain. Like I can't really, like, you know, I can't really comment on that, because, you know, you're not supposed to have any like favoritism or anything. But anyways, back to the OHL topic. It is popular. It has come around a couple times where they're like, oh, you know, Timmins could have an OHL market and that kind of thing. But the reason why it probably wouldn't happen, unfortunately, is because you know, we have a good fan base, but we just don't have enough population. So like the junior A games at first, when they came to town, they would sell out like crazy. Like you'd have almost every night be sold out. You'd have 2,000 people about, but like that's our biggest arena that can hold like capacity of 2,000. So that's a downfall. But I mean, it's people would like to have an OHL team. And I mean, I think it'd be great, you know, it'd be something to help, you know, maybe get more attraction to the city. But unfortunately, you know, you just can't, it wouldn't do well in a long run kind of situation. It'd be like one of those things where you'd probably have it for maybe a year or two and then it'd be gone. But the positive thing to the potential of having an OHL market in Timmins, not saying it can't happen. Hockey is a crazy game and there are crazy things that can happen. I mean, you look at the NHL, you never thought you'd see hockey in Las Vegas, but it happened. So, but the plus side was they had this charity game. I think it was for United Way and the Sudbury Wolves, and I believe it was the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies. They came to town and they had an exhibition game or whatever, and the turnout was really good. Like the tickets sold out like within weeks prior to the game. Like, really packed building, and I mean, people enjoyed it. I mean, I think the game went to a shootout. So like, it was really cool to like get a crack at like what it could look like if we were to have an OHL team. But I mean, at the end of the day, population is still, you know, an issue. And I mean, you know, the OHL is not a free league, right? There is money involved in a lot of it. And I think people don't quite know that part, you know, very well. But I mean, it's, it'd be cool if it eventually happened, but I'm not seeing it, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate.
Well, and not just, you mentioned, you know, Sudbury and North Bay being kind of the closest OHL teams, and I'd imagine Rue and Noranda's not awfully that far away either. Are they actually closer than the OHL teams?
I think so. I think there's like a, I think it's, I'm not too sure. Like, I know a couple of my buddies went there like for a game once, and I think it was like, I think they said it was like maybe two hours, 2.5 hours, depending on like traffic and all that. So it could be 3 hours. I mean, it's about almost the same as Sudbury, I think, if I'm not mistaken, but I haven't been down like that area. Like, I've never been down there for a trip or like for a hockey tournament when I used to play when I was back in like the, you know, the good old house league days, but, you know,
it's very odd for me to hear somebody refer to Rue and Noranda's down there.
No, yeah, well, I mean, I was surprised to hear that. I thought for sure it would have, like, when I heard about that game coming to Timmins at first, I was kind of surprised that they went with Rue and Noranda at first, because, you know, we are in Ontario, and I don't think, you know, you don't really hear a lot of QMJHL talks around Timmins. It's more, you know, you either know about the Ontario Hockey League, or you're just a guy that likes the NHL, that kind of thing, or you follow the junior A hockey, like the NOJHL, that kind of stuff. But I mean, it was a cool thing for them to come up, and I mean, it turned out to be a great game. So I mean,
but so you end up getting to London. And when you get there, yeah. You know, you mentioned you knew about the OHL. Did you know that you were coming in to essentially the biggest market in the OHL and this team that has such a big following and a giant building that's sold out just about every night?
Well, I knew a little bit about it. Like, so I knew that they had just won the Memorial Cup, and I had missed out by a year. Like, it's unfortunate that I didn't graduate high school a year earlier, because I would have been able to see, you know, Mitch Marner, Matthew Tkachuk, Christian Dvorak, and, you know, all those kind of guys that are now, like, making, you know, a lot of money in the NHL. So, even Bo Horvat, you know, I left that name out. But, you know, I heard about that, and I was like, oh, man, like, it's too bad I missed out, like, on that, because that would have been, you know, pretty cool. And I am a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, so seeing Mitch Marner play in his junior days would have been great, because he, like, carried it up that year. But, no, I knew they won a Memorial Cup, and I knew that the Hunters were the owner group of the London Knights, and I knew that they knew how to win. I didn't expect the sellout crowds to be, like, consistent. I thought, you know, there'd be some nights where it'd be, you know, you'd have maybe 7,000, but no, it's always 9,000 plus, and it was super cool. And but, like, I knew the Knights were good. I just didn't know they were that good, I guess, if you know what I mean. Like, I heard the talk, but I mean, I never knew it was, like, you know, 100% legit, I guess you could say.
Yeah, for sure. And you say, you know, unfortunately you missed out on a Memorial Cup by a year. Well, I don't, you're probably not going to have to wait nearly as long as most other people do, because unfortunately, yeah. You know, again, it's one of those, another kind of follow-up question to that. Did you know that they're kind of, you know, around the rest of the league, they're the evil Empire New York Yankees type team?
Yeah, no, I did hear about that. It was funny because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I have family members down in North Bay, and they're a Battalion fan, and I told them I was going to London, and they're like, oh, like, London, you know? And I was like, what do you mean, oh, London? And they're like, don't you know? I was like, don't I know what? And they're like, everybody hates London. I was like, what do you mean? Like, well, why do you hate a team so much? And they're like, because they always win. I was like, well, that's a crappy excuse. Like, you know, but, you know, I mean, if a team's able to win like that, like, all the time and keep it consistently, I mean, you know, someone's doing something right. So, and then at the same time, you kind of wonder, like, why aren't other teams taking notes? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's definitely it's become a weird dynamic in the OHL, especially since London spent so many years back in the 90s as just an also ran. So, it, you know, shows how things change. You know, coming into this season, before the season started, there didn't seem to be a clear-cut favorite in the Western Conference, and a lot of people figured, you know, everyone knew London would probably be one of the teams up there, but it just didn't seem to be like that one team like you always have. Like, everyone knew that last year the Sioux was going to be the team to beat in the Western Conference, and everyone kind of knew that Niagara was going to be a tough team in the East this year. No one really knew who was to put their hat on in the West. And as the year started, it seemed like London was going to be that team to run away with it. Now maybe there's a bit more questionable doubt in that, but London certainly has had a pretty good season up to this point, as they lead the Western Conference and are just a couple points behind Ottawa for the overall standings. And this is mostly a homegrown team. The Knights did make a couple trades at the deadline, but from the start of the season, this London team has been just on fire, haven't they?
Yeah, well, you know what? Last year I got to witness my first OHL playoff action, getting the chance to get a first crack at covering the team. And, you know, it was their first time they were swept, I believe, since the 1997, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, you kind of wondered, because they did have some great players last year, but they did make a few trades, because you know how it works. If there's teams that aren't gunning for, if there's teams that aren't going for it, then they're going to, trade off their best assets and try to get some picks out of, the teams. Perfect example, last year, Robert Thomas was traded to Hamilton. You had Cliff Poo, who is gone as well. So you had those kind of guys that were top end players on the team, but you just had that feeling, considering they had a 1-8 start last year to the regular season, that it wasn't going to be the greatest season ever. And then they found themselves at the bottom of the standings, and then somehow they climbed their way back into playoff contention. I believe they moved into fifth or fourth in the conference after that. They acquired Joseph Raymakers last year too from Sault Ste. Marie, and but you knew they had Matthew Vallalta as the number one starter, so they were able to afford to lose Raymakers. Sometimes I wonder if they'd like to have him back, considering the numbers he's been putting up since he got to London. But the Knights have been really, really good. They've rebounded very well. The Hunters have made the right moves during the offseason. Antonio Stranges, really good player. He's only in his first year in the OHL, and he's been turning heads ever since. Sahil Panwar, he's another guy that's going to end up, he's not always in the lineup, but when he is, he does make an impact. And then you got a guy like Luke Evangelista, who is going to, those three guys are going to, be kind of the face of the team in the next couple of years. And Stranges has been really good, for a rookie, putting up great points and, showing off great skills. Dale Hunter has the confidence to put him into high-end situations. I don't know if you've seen his shootouts lately, but, man, that kid has hands. It's unbelievable what he can do with the puck, and his skating capability, just able to go wide on the opponents like that. He does, this weird, he goes weird with his wide feet, that weird wide feet stride kind of thing he does, and it's keeps the puck away from his body completely away from the opponents, and helps them squeeze into those tight areas that other guys normally wouldn't be able to squeeze into. And but the Knights have done all the right things. They've kept certain players that can give them that push. Alex Formanton is a guy that they're lucky to get back. Unfortunately, he didn't do too well with the Ottawa Senators in the preseason, and a bit into the regular season, he had a couple of injuries, so that didn't help him out either. So you kind of had that feeling you were going to get him back. And then a lot of people were worried that we weren't going to get Evan Bouchard back. And if we wouldn't have gotten him back, I don't think there would have been any surprises, because the guy is going to be a full-time NHLer. He is definitely going to find himself a spot on that Oilers roster, especially with the struggle they've been having. But they're not that big of a struggle, because they're kind of, just to say, they're kind of still there in that playoff contention. But the Knights have been doing all the right moves. They found a way to, turn the team around very quickly. And I think it caught the league flat-footed, to be honest. I think it just, the league didn't expect them to come out this strong this year, considering they were swept last year by Owen Sound. But you make a couple trades, Kevin Hancock, overager, knows how to put up points. He's third in league scoring. That's, awesome. They barely had to give up anything for it. They've just made the right moves, and it just goes to show that management and coaching is very experienced. And when you got over 700 wins in the Ontario Hockey League as a coach, it's pretty hard to, it's not that hard to, bring a team back and get them to rebound after not terrible outing, but a playoff outing that you wouldn't have, you didn't want to have happen, but unfortunately it did happen. But the Knights were good. They turned it around, and now they find themselves, like you said, neck and neck with the Ottawa 67s. And I think that the way they're going right now, hey, they're, they're making a run.
Yeah, that very non-London Knights exit from the playoffs last year, as you mentioned. It was the first time they were swept in the first round since the in nearly 20 years there. And they've had first-round exits before, but really hadn't been swept in a long time. You had mentioned, you know, what a great year they're having this year. But really, when the season started, not many people expected London to maybe go all-in crazy at the deadline this year because of the fact that they've set themselves up pretty good for next year as well. You know, most of those players you mentioned are going to be back next year and going to be a year older and a year better, year more developed. You know, yeah, London will be losing a couple. You know, Evan Bouchard won't be back and Alex Fermenton won't be back, but you know, you've had, you know, Bouchard missed a big stretch of the season, of course, with World Juniors, and Fermenton has been hurt, and this team has had to play without those guys for long stretches and done just as well. So you'd imagine, you know, things will get better next year. At the end of the day, you know, London really didn't make a ton of moves at the deadline to begin with, mainly because they couldn't, because of the fact that they ran out of player cards for this season. But do you think in the long run, that might actually end up being better for them, because they don't kind of they don't go all in this year. It saves them to be able to maybe more so go all in next year as well.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if they planned it that way, but I mean, if that's the case, I mean, like I said, like I was talking about how smart management has been, and I mean, if that's how they planned it, you know, they're like, you know what, we won't go completely all in this year, but we're gonna still do something to make, you know, to get, let us, allow us to contend and get a few playoff rounds in, you know, so you, at the same time you can give experience to the upcoming players like I mentioned Strongis and then Tanwar and Evangelista, but I mean, like you mentioned, in the long run, this can definitely help them out, and they should have a strong team next year once again. And I mean, if your other teams, like the one team is Sault Ste. Marie, but that, talking about the Sioux, though, they kind of concern me a little bit, because if you look at their track record against the London Knights, the Sioux Greyhounds are the only team that the Knights still, for some reason, have trouble getting past. I mean, I just don't get it. Sometimes it's like, why can't you, you know, maybe pull off a game against them? But I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about who shows up. But no, the Knights are definitely set for a good playoff run this year. They should, depending on how their second round goes, because it seems like Guelph is very likely to run into them in the second round. But depending on how that goes, I mean, they could go all the way this year. And I mean, next year will definitely be a stronger team because they'll have experience. And I mean, talking about experience, you could look at guys like Connor McMichael, who's been, you know, just red hot as of late. He's got 29 goals on the season. He's on pace for 40. And I mean, he only had 8 goals last season. And I mean, I think he's about to turn 18, or he already is 18. He just turned 18 recently, and he's draft eligible. Like the guy has literally turned, like, it's crazy how 1 year with the London Knights makes a difference. And I mean, not just looking at McMichael, but you look back at the rookies, you got Strongis, who hasn't played a full season yet with the Knights, and you can already see improvement. You know, he's got more confidence with the puck. He gets into those, you know, dirty areas, you know, some players usually don't like going into, especially players that are his age. And I mean, he's just, you know, he's really, really improving at a fast rate. And I mean, I think next year he'll be one of those, he'll definitely be in the, I think, top two lines for the Knights next year. So I think the Knights have a lot of depth, and I think the Knights are very fortunate for the way things have turned out for them this year. I mean, you know, they're going to contend this year, and you know that they're going to do, you know, they might go all in next year, like, who knows, but they've definitely have a really good plan, and it's really working out. So
coming in, you know, one of the things that we haven't really talked about too much has been the goaltending. You did briefly touch on Joseph Raymakers, of course, who the Knights picked up early last season. And he's been, for the most part, a very good goaltender for the Knights and been the starter. But I think it's no secret that next year, when the Knights are likely to go all in, that Jordan Cooey is going to be the guy in the net and getting the bulk of the games. He's been getting a lot of games in this year as well. And to the point, you know, some people are so impressed with him that I've heard some people even suggest that maybe he should be the guy to take it this year instead of Raymakers. Has that been something that you felt is even a possibility, or do you kind of think like, no, this is Raymakers, you know, this is Raymakers' run to go with the team?
Well, if there's one thing I know that I've, like, is Raymakers is a kind of goaltender where, yes, he will let in those ones you wish you can have back as a goaltender, but when it comes to stepping up in the moment, like when it's a big game, and I mean, he's known to step up, and I mean, you look at his highlight reel, the guy makes the saves that other OHL goaltenders, like, you know, can hardly make. And sometimes it's just unreal the stuff he comes up with. So I think when it comes to big time hockey, I don't think Raymakers has reached his potential yet this season. I don't think he's, you know, I don't think we've seen what Raymakers can really do yet this season. From what I've seen last season, I know he can play a lot better than what he's doing now, but even though he is winning games, which is unreal. And he's had a heavy workload since, you know, Jordan Coy had a little setback with injuries, but, I look at Raymakers and I look at him and I'm like, he's the kind of goalie where he can step up whenever he's asked to. Whereas Jordan Coy, I think he's just got that natural ability to, you know, be zoned in all the time. And I mean, sometimes, you know, every goalie gets a bad bounce. And I mean, sometimes, you know, no one really sees or understands that. But I look at Coy and I think if, let's say, Raymakers has a bad, you know, bad start to the playoffs, and I think Coy can easily step in. Now, the thing is, I'm really worried that the team might play in front of Raymakers a little bit better than they do in front of Coy. Now, I don't know if that's just, you know, I haven't seen Coy a lot recently because, you know, he hasn't played very much. But it's just weird because I feel like sometimes, you know, the team plays in front of one goaltender more than they do, like, more than the other. So, I mean, it's tough because I think Raymakers is a great goaltender. I think Coy is a very good goaltender. And, I mean, if it were to come down to it, I think Dale Hunter would probably use Raymakers. And that, like, Raymakers is the go-to guy because, he's got more years in the league. He's got the experience. I mean, I don't think Raymakers won't be coming back next year because this is his last season, I believe, in the OHL. So, but Jordan Coy, I think his time will come where he will be the go-to guy for the Knights. And when that happens, I don't think anyone should be concerned at all. I think both goaltenders are really good. I think right now, you know, since Raymakers has been into more games, I feel like, you know, the more you play a goaltender, the more he'll, you know, he'll find that pace or that tempo to the game where he can just be lights out every time. So, I mean, it's tough because, you know, they're both really good and they both can put up numbers. I think the Knights have one of the best save percentages for combined goaltending in the league. So, it's really tough, but right now I really like what I'm seeing from Raymakers. And he, I spoke to him a couple of games ago. I believe it was when they played Windsor in that back-to-back home and home. And he was telling me, he's like, oh, I take it one game at a time. And, you know, if I have to play 68 games, I have to play 68 games. But I mean, just by hearing that, he's that kind of guy where, hey, if you need me, I'll play with my heart out until we get the, I'll find a way to get the win and help the guys win. So, I mean, he's very confident lately, which is good. You don't want to be too overconfident as a goaltender, but I mean, confidence as a goaltender is really good because I feel like, some goaltenders in this league, don't have that strength mentally. And I feel like if a goaltender isn't mentally there, you know, he's not going to perform as well. But, Coy can definitely come in next year. I'm not, I go for it. Like, I'm not saying it'd be terrible, like 100% for Coy next year, no matter what, because I feel like he's going to be ready. But right now, I think Raymakers still has, something to prove before he goes out here and ends his time with the OHL. But Raymakers has something to prove. And I think Coy, basically, if he's got to prove anything, he's just going to keep showing the coaching staff and the fan base, because the fan base is very important, because if the fans aren't happy with something, then, something's got to be, you got to figure out what can be done to improve. But I think Coy's just got to prove to the fan base and the coaching staff that when he is called upon, that he can perform just as well as Raymakers.
And definitely the the fans, some of the toughest in the OHL to please when you have a lot of Memorial Cups and OHL championships in such a short span. So let's talk about London's chances as moving forward this year. I mentioned earlier how at the start of the season, you really didn't know who the guy, so to speak, was going to be in the Western Conference, the team. As things have progressed here, it seems like it's kind of been narrowed down to almost four favorites, so to speak. You got the London Knights, the Sioux Greyhounds, the Saginaw Spirit, and the Guelph Storm, who've all kind of, the Sioux didn't make any buying moves at the deadline, but those are four teams that have separated themselves from the pack and certainly are going to be the four teams that will to look out for, and at least the three other teams that London has to look out for going into the Western Conference playoffs. Now, as you see the Knights and as you've seen some of these other teams since possibly since the deadline here, what do you think London's chances are? I mean, they do have the lead in the Western Conference, but I know a lot of people have said that Guelph seems to be the deepest on paper, and of course the Sioux Greyhounds, despite not doing anything at the deadline, have just stayed red hot, and as you mentioned, have always been kind of a thorn in the London Knights' side. What do you think the Knights' chances are of getting through that Western Conference this season?
Okay, so hands down, the Guelph Storm on paper are, hands down, I think the Guelph Storm on paper definitely, they win the league. On paper, I think Guelph can take the league. They got a strong team. They built, they loaded up and they basically said, we're all in. But at the same time, they gave up almost 10 years of their future picks. So, I mean, if they luck out somehow this year, this one's going to sting for, the Storm fan base. But, like you mentioned, the top four, the Knights, the Greyhounds, Saginaw. I like what Saginaw did. I think Saginaw is that it's going to be that team that's going to be that underdog story where, they didn't load up as much as Guelph, and they're definitely not the London Knights. The London Knights, I think, have a very unique style of play that, teams always try to match up against, but somehow the Knights just find a way to, they find ways to win. So it's tough. I think the Knights can definitely make a push, depending on if the standings are to shift in the next, from now till the end of the season, if Saginaw were to drop down to fourth, and then whoever they go on to play in the second, in the first round, that could affect, right now, I think if the Knights play Saginaw in the playoffs, I think the Knights win that one six games, maybe even five, depending. Because I think the Knights are just when I saw them play Saginaw they played each other once this season. I thought Saginaw's game plan kind of looked like, we're going to try to be physical with them and try to get them, on edge and, take little, dumb penalties and that kind of thing. But the Knights kept their cool. And I mean, they ended up filling the, the net with pucks. So I think the Knights are stronger mentally. And I think that just the level of expertise on the bench and in management, I think the Knights overall are a lot more set than Saginaw. But when it comes to Sault Ste. Marie, they didn't make any moves at the deadline. They kind of just said, we got what we got. We got Morgan Frost. We got Barrett Hayton. We got Matthew Vallalta as our goaltender. Let's see where this goes kind of thing. So they're the kind of team where, they're not making a push, but I mean, if they end up in a spot where they can find themselves potentially able to go to the third round, I think Sault Ste. Marie can be dangerous because even though they're in a playoff spot already, I still feel like they can end up playing spoiler in the playoffs. Like they'd be that kind of team where it's like, we don't expect to go far, but I mean, if we somehow find that momentum or, something to carry us to, through some rounds and get us to maybe a potential conference final or a final, I think that Sault Ste. Marie can be dangerous. And I think momentum is going to be something big for them. Whereas the Knights, it's weird. The Knights, they always find ways. That's the thing. And I feel like if you want to be successful in any hockey game, you got to find ways to win. And I know it's been becoming a very, cliche term lately. You hear it in the NHL all the time, got to find ways to win and that, but it's true. You got to find ways to win. And the Knights do. If goaltending needs to step up, then goaltending steps up. If, they need guys to score, they need production on the offense, guys step up. You got McMichael, Like I mentioned earlier, he's been great. Liam Foudy, I was actually worried about him because he ended up going on that slump, but now he's on the 9-game goal streak, and I mean the guy's been tearing it up. Like I think he's found his game back, and once Alex Formanton comes back, I think they had Cotter at center, and then they had Foudy and Formanton on the wing, and that was the Knights' top line before Formanton went down at the training camp or development camp for Team Canada. And that was a killer line. And I feel like now that Foodie's found his game back, when Formanton comes back into the lineup, I mean, you know, good luck, because the Knights are going to be they're going to have a lot of depth. And I mean, I was talking with Pete James the other day, and we were just talking about, you know, what we think would happen when Formanton comes back. And the thing with Formanton is players around the league know that he's got skill. They know he's got the speed, and they know that he can score. So I feel like once he draws back into the lineup, he'll draw eyes away from other players. So right now, Kevin Hancock's the guy that's got a lot of attention. Liam Foudy's got a lot of attention. But, you know, I talked about his numbers earlier, and he, you know, it makes sense why he's got people watching him when he play. You know, you got guys like them who are being watched right now. But once Formanton comes back into the lineup, all those eyes will be drawn towards him. And that's when the Knights, I think, will – you know, strike and show how much depth they have, because, you know, you'll be watching Formanton when, and then next thing you know, you'll be like, where did Connor McMichael come from? I didn't even know he was on the ice. Where was Hancock? I didn't even see him there, you know, because Formanton has that ability to draw the play towards him and then, you know, feed the puck to someone else that's in an open spot that just finds that quiet ice. And I mean, another guy that's really good at doing that for the Knights is Adam Boqvist. That guy has just sick hockey sense. It's unbelievable what he does with the puck and how calm he is, especially on the power play. I love his puck movement on the power play. He's really, really good at finding guys in the quiet ice. But and I think that's what's going to give the Knights the edge in the playoffs, is the Knights know how to find quiet ice, and they have the players to draw eyes away from guys that are being watched right now that won't be watched as much, and then that's when it'll hit the other teams pretty hard, because, once Formanton's back, you know, guys are going to forget about Paul Cotter. They're going to forget about Connor McMichael. They're going to forget about Foudy. They're going to forget about those guys. And eventually, I think that's what's going to make a difference, is that they'll be so focused on the high end players on the Knights that they'll just tend to forget about the guys that are, you know, that were killing it while, you know, Formanton was out of the lineup, and before, you know, even Bouchard and those guys that came back from NHL camps. So, I mean, I think that's what will give the Knights an edge, is that they have so many guys that could take the eyes away from other players that are currently producing a lot for the Knights. So, and I think you look at Guelph when they came into London, the Knights, you know, they had a 3-2 lead. And then that third period was just, I mean, okay, that was atrocious. If you're a Knights fan, anyone that's a Knights fan, I feel bad, because like I think it was two goals in under 2 minutes, and then they took the lead early in the third, and then Raymakers gets pulled, Coy goes in, you know. But at the same time, I feel it's because, you know, I wondered after the game, I was like, what would that game have been like if Formanton would have been on the ice? Because when Formanton's in the lineup, man, the Knights are a fast team without him, but when he's in the lineup, the Knights are very quick, you know, they're a quick team. So I think the game has evolved to where it's a game. It's all about speed and skill now. And I think the Knights have a lot of speed. And I do think that, you know, they're at least their first from line 1 to 3, they've got a lot of skill set and a lot of speed. And I think, you know, a lot of teams try to play the Knights physically, and that usually bites them, because the Knights have so much speed, right? So they just burn you. Like, if you try to make a hit, you put yourself out of position. Next thing you know, you're in a 3-on-2 or 2-on-1 or whatnot. And then that's how the Knights get you, right? They burn you with their speed. So, you know, Guelph is a big team. So I think if the Knights are going to beat them, it's going to be on speed and skill. And I think the Knights have better goaltending too. I just think, at the end of the day, it's playoff hockey. Anything can happen. Right now, we could say London Knights, and then next thing you know, it could be Guelph going to the top. Like, just because you're in fourth place doesn't mean you can't make a run, or just because you're in third, you know, if you're Saginaw, you don't have Nick Suzuki or Fedor Gordiev or Marcus Phillips on your roster, doesn't mean you can't go anywhere. I mean, you got Owen Tippett in your lineup, and you got Ryan McLeod. Those are two good players. I mean, Tippett had some Team Canada experience, so I mean, you know, teams can surprise teams, and I mean, it's playoff hockey. Just enjoy it, and I mean, at the end of the day, it's gonna be really good hockey.
Yeah, definitely. It's why the old cliche, you know, you don't play the games on paper, and you know, Guelph has dug themselves into a bit of a hole by the fact that, you know, they pretty much, they probably can't finish better than third in the West this year because of being so far back in London. I know it's mathematically possible that Guelph can catch and pass London for the division, but realistically, I think the Knights are pretty set that they're gonna win the division anyway, and they're only their only fear maybe. Maybe is that Sioux could pass them for first in the conference, but London really is going to probably finish first or second, and I'd imagine that would give them a bit more confidence, knowing that they're going to have home ice a little bit longer than a team like Guelph moving forward. And as you just mentioned, you know, they got the Alex Fermentin factor in their back pocket. You know, when what is the prognosis on Fermentin, and when will he be rejoining the Knights lineup?
So Formington, I think people know by now that he injured his knee when he was playing in pre-tournament action with against the U Sports team. And anyways, he went down and they decided to shut him down. You know, he wasn't going to play because they didn't want to aggravate it. And I think, so what's going on right now is I believe that the Knights, their game plan was to, you know, not rush anything because he will be a key player in the postseason. So I believe that they said, okay, you know what, we're going to keep him, you know, we're going to make sure he's healthy. We're going to make sure his knee is, you know, or the leg is stronger than ever. We're going to make sure that they're going to make sure that they hit all the right stops. To make sure that he's healthy. And what I'm hearing is that he can potentially return either first week of, like, early week of February or in the second week of February. I know he's close. He'll probably start skating soon, I would assume, that he'll start skating soon with the team, you know, a little, just a bit, maybe 20 minutes of skating every day, that kind of thing. But I do think he'll come in. He'll draw back into the lineup probably either second week of February, maybe like, you know, mid-February. So whenever, and I think that'll be really good because they play Guelph, I think, twice in the middle of February. So, I mean, if he comes back, and I'd assume he'd come back before they play Guelph just to make sure that everything's good to go, because I think the Knights, February is going to be the important month for the Knights. I think that's where you're going to see what they have, what they can do. And at the same time, I think that's the month they need to, you know, make a statement. You know, we didn't make a lot of deals at the deadline, but we got, you know, we have confidence. We trust our players that we have. We trust our system. And, you know, we're here to play, and we're here to compete with whatever you throw at us, whether that's, you know, Nick Suzuki, whether that's Owen Tippett, you know, and if they reach the finals and end up playing Ottawa or like the Niagara, those kind of, or even, you know, those kind of teams, I think the Knights have to prove in February that they're ready to play and that they're not, that they are a tough team to play. And I think that's what they're going to look to prove. But as far as Alex Formington goes, mid-February, that's the timetable I hear. And I hear things are going really well. So Knights fans will be lucky to see him back in the lineup. And I think the players as well are looking forward to getting him back. I know I was talking to Liam Foodie the other day, and he was telling us how, you know, we asked him about what it was like to have Formington on his line at first when they paired together on the wing on the first line. And I think Foodie was really anxious, I think more anxious than the fans, to see him come back in the lineup, because I think he knows that he found his game back now. And I think he knows that, you know, the kind of player Alex Formington is, and, you know, what they can do together. So Foodie was really excited to hear the thought that, you know, it was almost mid-February and that Formington was, you know, a couple weeks away from coming back to the lineup. So I think once the Knights get Formington back, I think that's when the Knights will get the ball rolling. And I think that's where they'll be able to pull away from teams like Sault Ste. Marie and, you know, make sure that, you know, they're not caught and that they do win the division, because I think that's, if there's one thing I know from doing the night, from covering the Knights in the last two seasons, is that they play very well on home ice, and they love playing at Budweiser Gardens. They just love the atmosphere, and it just it just brings them to another level that you normally wouldn't see them at. Like it is a team. So the Knights fan base are part of the team, you know. So they'll do whatever it takes for the team to do well and like to be happy. So, once Foreman gets back, we'll see the real side to the London Knights, and I think that's where teams better look out, because if teams thought they were tough to beat now, you know, watch out.
Definitely. And as going down the stretch, you know, you mentioned a couple games against Guelph. London and Guelph still have three more matchups against each other before the end of the regular season, two of those being in London. So definitely a good gauge on how things might go in the playoffs. Alan, thank you so much for taking out so much time of your day and talking with some London Knights hockey with us. And I begrudgingly say this, good luck to the Knights the rest of the way.
Yeah. Well, it's hockey, right? Anything can happen.
Definitely. That's Alain Cavillon from the London Knights and beat reporter for the Knights. And you can follow him on Twitter at Al Cavillon, and we'll give you the spelling for that in our outro later. When we come back, we wrap up this week's episode of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Kalia breaking through. Liam Hamm can't find it. It comes out for Landry. Landry shot, scores! Cade Landry! The Bulldogs are tied for fifth place off Landry's second of the game. It's an overtime victory.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast. As we wrap up this week's episode, really like to thank once again Alain Cavillon for coming on and talking some London Knights hockey with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Al Cavillon. Now that's A-L, and Cavillon is spelled Q-U-E-V-I-L-L-O-N. So give him a follow on Twitter. You could read his articles at 1069thex.com. TheEx.com. Actually, wait, no. That's the and then the letter X. Sorry about that. Thank you so much for him coming on the show this week and talking some Knights hockey with us as London goes. You know, screw him, right? No, we joke. Anyway, looking forward to games this week. We got a lot of games, again, with top teams in the league facing each other this week, all starting on Wednesday night. Matter of fact, we have a lot of Wednesday night games this week. Five of them, to be exact. But I would imagine the one that most people would have circled on their calendars, the Saginaw Spirit visiting the Guelph Storm on Wednesday night. The first time those two teams have played each other since October. Two very different looking teams since they played back then. So that should be a marquee matchup against two teams at the top of the Western Conference standings. Friday night, a huge game, the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds on the road. They'll be in Niagara to face the Ice Dogs, two of the top teams in the league, as previously mentioned on that one. Should be a big game. That's Thursday night. I might have just said Friday. That's Thursday night's game. Friday night, we got some more action. Of course, the Guelph Storm will be in Ottawa to take on the 67s. Guelph with a big 8-4 win against Ottawa a couple weeks ago. Let's see if Ottawa can match that one back. We have the always classic home and home Friday and Saturday night between the Peterborough Petes and the Oshawa Generals. So Peterborough starting to slide a little bit. We'll see if they can get things back on track with this home and home against their arch rival in Oshawa. Saturday night, the big games continue. The Niagara Ice Dogs will be in Ottawa to take on the 67s. Two top teams in the Eastern Conference there, so we'll see how that one goes. Big weekend there for Ottawa. And finally, things wrap up on Sunday. There are not many games on Sunday, actually. It is Super Bowl Sunday, so there's only two games, and they're both in the afternoon, but that would be highlighted by the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds visiting the Oshawa Generals. So some really good games on tap this weekend for everyone to check out. The OHL Fanboys Podcast can be found on iTunes and on Spotify for all you Apple and Android listeners. Of course, OHLFanboys.com for those of you without either of those platforms for some reason.
Of course, Brian is on Twitter at Toast84, and I am on Twitter at SteveMcLean888. Thank you all so much for listening. Until next week, for Brian Thompson, I am Steve McLean. So long, everybody.
You've been listening to the OHL Fanboys Podcast.